suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try to find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this zombie takeout coming up may just rekindle your will to live. What's up? Welcome to episode 213 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a little bit of listener submitted. A couple of emails from John Phillips. Haven't heard from him for a while.
Welcome back, my friend.
This first one's in reference to the Weinsteins turning down Clerks 3. So Smith doesn't have $6 million from his empire? Hasn't he heard of crowdsourcing? I guess he doesn't have enough fans to generate that much money. And he makes a very good point, albeit sarcastically. Smith could make that overnight on Kickstarter.
He probably could, yeah. I wonder why he doesn't.
I think he's been in the system too long, so long that he's forgotten how he started.
I don't know. It's strange, because, I mean, I think he's absolutely right. If he really wanted to make this film,
oh, yeah.
Why wouldn't he just go out and do it himself?
Right.
Huh.
Probably has $6 million to himself. He could finance this movie on his own if he chose to. If all it'll take is $6 million.
Well, of course it could just be that he doesn't think he can make it back.
Well, yeah, that's a distinct possibility, and he wants someone else to take that risk instead of himself.
Right.
But with crowdfunding, if you do Indiegogo or Kickstarter, you don't have to pay anyone back as long as, you know, you can follow through on the perks.
Yeah. Which he has a ton of stuff that, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
He could just send stuff from the stash, or, I mean...
And he could easily make the perks irrelevant to the success of the movie. Usually they aren't relevant to the success of the project. So, you know, all of that would be accounted for before the movie gets released. So he wouldn't have anybody to answer to if it bombs, and he wouldn't have anybody getting upset with him because they didn't make their money back. Yeah. It really is the perfect solution, but like I said, I think he's just been in the system too long.
I don't know. Well, because he's kind of out of the system now. I mean, even though he's still making the movies, the man started his own podcasting network.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than, you know, just stay. I mean, he could have had a show on Sirius XM.
Right.
Like, they were playing him on, like, the O&A channel, or what was once called the O&A channel, before it just became the O channel? I don't know. Before the merger, it was. They were playing him regularly. Okay. And that's when I listened to a lot of his episodes. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, now with his own network, I just don't really catch him as often as I should.
But as far as movies go, I still think he wants someone else to take the financial risk. I guarantee you, you know, there's a major studio backing Tusk and that whole trilogy. He hasn't done a truly independent film since Clerks.
I think you're right, yeah. Well, wasn't Red State indie?
Actually, don't know. That's a good question.
Or was that Lionsgate?
Considering how quickly it went to On Demand and Netflix and all of that, it probably did have a studio backing it.
Yeah.
And all of the promotion.
I think it may have been Lionsgate. Lionsgate takes that kind of risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Lionsgate will put out just about anything.
Yeah.
John also said in a PS on that email, I know I haven't commented in a while, but I still listen every week. Thanks, John.
Good, sir. Thank you.
And his second email was about Nothing Lasts Forever, the movie that we were supposed to review last week, but only you got a chance to see before it was pulled off of YouTube. He said, how the hell did this not get released? It was due to come out the same year as Gremlins and Ghostbusters. I think that may have been part of it. They knew it was going to get completely run over by Gremlins and Ghostbusters.
It's the subject matter.
There's also the subject matter and the implications and all of the stuff you were talking about last time.
Yeah. You know what? I listened to our episode, of course, as I do every week. I listen to us before going on just to, like, see if we fucked up anywhere, or if there's anything. And I left out the part of the secret society that lives underneath New York that controls everything that goes on, all of reality.
Well, you got to have a nice Illuminati reference.
Yeah, except this is 1984, and there were no Illuminati references made.
That's true.
Right.
Hmm. for the reasons it wasn't released.
I mean, people, the Masons, an old organization, long history, people were always suspicious of them and stuff.
The Stonecutters.
Right, but it wasn't like a, thing that you just did in the movie where these were the people that controlled stuff. I can't think of an earlier reference to them than this. But yeah, there are people that live beneath New York who control pretty much everything that happens.
Well, the Masons were referenced by The Simpsons as Stonecutters. I think that was the 80s.
Oh, way after this, though.
Oh, yeah, way after this.
Probably more 90s, by the
Possibly, yeah.
time that episode
Yeah,
came
because they
out.
didn't start till the late 80s. That's right. I always
Yeah.
think they started earlier than they did.
Well, they were a short on Tracy Ullman between commercials in like 86, 87.
That's why I think that they started earlier.
And then got their own show like 88, 89, I think.
And of course, Nothing Lasts Forever was years before that.
Yeah.
All right, on to some news. This is from Deadline. Undead, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies resurrects with Lily James, Sam Riley, Bella Heathcote to star. The movie version of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is now a reality, with principal photography slated to start in September and Cross Creek Pictures acquiring domestic rights with a commitment for a wide U.S. release. Hot British actors Lily James and Sam Riley and Australian Bella Heathcote have been set to lead the film that mixes the 1813 Jane Austen classic Pride and Prejudice with a legion of bloodthirsty undead.
How awesome would Bruce Campbell have been, as it Rochester? That was the moody asshole.
Here's where it gets interesting. Burr Steers, director of Igby Goes Down and Charles St. Cloud, is directing from a screenplay by David O. Russell.
What?
David O. Russell, The Fighter, I Heart Huckabees, what was the least recent one? Oh, the one with Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper, Silver Linings
Silver Linings
Playbook.
Playbook.
He's writing the screenplay for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
That is the probably one of the last names that I was expecting you to say.
This story was not going to be in the news tonight until I got to his name. Because the rest of it, we've talked about the movie, but the rest of it isn't really that interesting
Have we
until you
really
get to
talked about
David
the
O. Russell.
movie?
I think we've mentioned it.
I mean, I'm sure we probably talked about it like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, Zombie Slayer, or whatever the fuck we
Yeah,
did.
Vampire Hunter.
I get the two confused.
I've heard the book was pretty good, actually. The movie, not so much.
But, I mean, David O. Russell, really? I think that was probably right after Woody Allen, maybe. Of names that I was not expecting you to say.
Well, Russell has done some interesting stuff. Huckabees, for
Tyler
example.
Perry's Pride and Prejudice and
Oh,
Zombies.
God. So, yeah, I might not have been that interested in the film. I am now.
Of course. I mean, I was, I would have seen it anyway. I mean, we would have seen it for the show,
Yeah, we would have
obviously.
reviewed it, but I wouldn't have been in a hurry to see it until his name was attached.
Right. You mentioned that name. I have to see this. I have to see this immediately. There's no other movie I need to see. I have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet, but fuck that. I want to see this.
The only other one, like if they came out at the exact same time, that I might be inclined to see first is A Modern Ocean, which, we're desperately waiting for.
Okay, oh, of course. I mean, it goes without saying.
But fuck Episode 7, I'm seeing this first.
Oh, definitely. I'm way more psyched about this than Star Wars now. You've piqued my interest. This is the first movie that has piqued my interest in God knows how long. Maybe the 12-year movie that's out right now, Boyhood. But I mean, that not like, oh, I gotta see it. It's like, you know what?
It's an
That's
interesting
probably gonna
idea.
be cool. Yeah, you gotta see how that concept plays out. But this, I gotta fucking see this.
Oh, yeah. I just hope it's not a red herring or he doesn't, leave before, any work gets done or
Oh no,
although
yeah.
if they're shooting in September, which means the screenplay is done.
He's David Russell. He can do whatever the fuck he wants. He
Yeah.
didn't he win an Oscar for Silver Linings Playbook?
I believe that Rosalie is nominated. Did The Fighter get Best Picture, or was it just nominated?
I don't know. I think it was just nominated.
Okay.
But I remember Silver Linings Playbook taking a lot of awards that year. So the man can do whatever the fuck he wants at this point. And if he wants to direct Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, God damn it, he will.
That's the thing. Those were directed by David O. Russell. This is just being written by him.
Yeah.
Burst
okay,
Ears
yeah,
is directing.
A screenplay.
Yeah. Still, I'm assuming he wrote the screenplay to his films. I can't see anybody else writing Huckabees. I'm sure that was an original.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is going to get real interesting.
What other writers do you think that should have been on the least expected list of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
I would have expected Jane Austen herself before David O. Russell.
Well, if she were a zombie, that would not be impossible.
Possibly. Well, I don't know if she'd be able to write if she were a zombie. Perhaps a vampire, which is a whole different thing.
You think their fingers would fall off or something before...
They just don't seem really capable of higher thought.
Why does the page say brains, brains, brains over and over
exactly.
again?
Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1972, Silent Running. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Cantaloupe. It has a color and a smell.
And also brought to you by greenhouses. Grow all the plants you want. No spaceship required. I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me running? wait a minute. Okay, anyway.
Well played.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we're in space where nobody can grow a plant. Well, actually, no, it's Earth. I believe they say it's the beginning of the year 2000 or 2100. Not sure
okay.
which century
I wasn't
talking
sure about,
about.
That. I would
well,
have
they,
had a year in one of my title suggestions if I knew the year.
You only hear somebody saying in a transmission on this first day of this new century, I believe
okay.
they said. So that could mean the 20, you know, 2000, or it could mean 2100.
And given it was 72, 2000 is a distinct possibility.
Yeah, I just, you know what, I just assumed it was the year 2000, and I just kept thinking Conan O'Brien jokes the entire fucking movie, but that's another story. We damn killed every plant on Earth, and someone came up with the wise decision of, if we can't grow them on Earth, we'll grow them in space somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, the whole time I was thinking, why couldn't we just use this thing the Victorians had even used called greenhouses?
Yeah.
They're
already in a geodesic dome. Just put it on Earth.
Right, right. So instead they launch it into space because I guess we couldn't be trusted to grow them on Earth. I don't know. And they are worried about downsizing because maybe it is the year 2000. And they believe not only are they recalled back to Earth, and this is a point that is never explained in the movie,
mm-hmm.
they have to blow the plants up.
Because they're unnecessary cargo, because the freighters are being returned to commercial service and nobody cares about the plants. Except
right.
for, oh,
why not just jettison them into space?
Yeah. Because plot.
You're right, because plot. Plot happens. So right, they have to nuke them, and of course our hero, who is the last person of the human race that cares about plants. And knows a little bit about them. Not, it's, as it turns out later in the film, not nearly enough.
Because apparently he was the ship's doctor.
And all I could think of was the whole water runs downhill moment from last week. Of the plants need light. I'm just like jaw dropped. You gotta be kidding me. But anyway, He decides he's not going to just blow all the plants up. He's going to at least take one of them with him and make a run for it, killing his co-workers in the process.
And that's where it becomes a very different movie.
Yes. Then it becomes a very isolated movie that has inspired a lot of sci-fi to come, obviously. He is all by himself. Anthropomorphizes the drones with him. And it actually gives them, it gets really weird because they do become sentient, it feels, after a while, for some reason.
Because that's how he sees them.
Yeah, and then I guess you could say hilarity ensues. He goes out with the junk, expecting not to be found, but they find him, and yeah, hilarity ensues.
And the whole thing is a standoff on opposite sides of Mars, of Saturn, rather.
Yes.
And Silent Running, the title, which is an old naval term for a sub running without using its radio.
Well, right. That's where the that is where the term originates. It's kind of an odd title for the movie, really.
Because that's what he's doing for that second hour, for that last hour.
Yeah.
He's hiding on the opposite side of Mars from Earth, trying to stay quiet.
Was it Mars or Saturn that he was hiding
behind? It was Saturn. I misspoke when I said Mars. Because there's a great shot of the rings, which originally was supposed to be in 2001. Now, you gave the plot summary. I'm going to give a little summary of the experience of watching the film.
Okay.
Except a premise that makes no sense.
Right.
Slog through a half hour of incredibly clunky exposition and performances that are horribly phoned in, and you will be rewarded with a brilliant solo performance from Bruce Dern for about an hour. It is literally an acting solo. There is no other speaking role in the film for that last hour.
Right. Except, you know, the voiceover.
Except for a voiceover radio for a couple of very short scenes.
Yeah.
The rest of it is just him, and he pulls it off.
I definitely agree. He does give one hell of a performance in this, and it's one of the only reasons really to watch this.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that second half, because I think it does get very interesting there from a certain perspective. But at the beginning, he's shown in this robe. At the very beginning of the movie, he's skinny dipping, and he, you know, then you see him in this long robe. Kind of gives him the appearance of a monk.
Yes.
Which fits in nicely with how the rest of the crew sees him.
Yeah.
They make cracks about him being celibate, and he's a vegetarian, and they basically just make fun of him for effectively being a tree hugger. And I also thought it was interesting that the freighter was owned by American Airlines.
Who were thanked?
Yeah, because they used the logo.
At the end of the film. I mean, there's a few weird sponsors and weird product placement in this film.
But normally when you see interstellar travel in a film, it's usually a military thing. This is one of the first that shows it being commercial that I know of.
Probably, right? Did you catch the other two super strange product placements?
No, I didn't.
In this movie?
All right, if I did, they went right past me.
Wow. Okay. There was only one shot of it, but it was very early on. For no reason whatsoever, there was a Coca-Cola sign.
I didn't notice that.
Placed on one of the bins. Like, they brought a bin of Coca-Cola up there with them.
Clearly product placement.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. And it was just the Coca-Cola, the red and the white writing on the side of one of their giant bins. However, there was another one, a very strange sponsor for this film, considering what this film was about. Mm-hmm. Dow.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Dow Chemical was placed, I think I saw it like two or three times with the storage bins. Like he was moving one at one point. Like the first time I saw it, I didn't, like, did that really say that? And then I saw it again later. I was like, holy fuck, that really is them. So this movie about us decimating the environment of the planet Earth is sponsored by
Dow Chemical.
Dow Chemical. I won't make the comment because I don't want to get sued. The irony of that statement.
Yeah, yeah. Now, why were they sending the plants into space?
Exactly. What the fuck was that?
Just put them in a dome as a botanical garden on Earth. You know, I understand they have to be taken out of their natural environment for whatever reason, but just leave them in the dome on Earth. You don't need to send them into space except because plot.
Why would space being an improvement over the planet Earth.
And were they going somewhere? Were we trying to seed another world, perhaps? They don't say that.
Well, no, because there were no women.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking seeding, you know, botanically first. You know, get a little atmosphere before we start bringing people up. But
that doesn't make any sense. If you'd bring people along with the plants too, you wouldn't just bring four dudes. But you're right. What was the end game of this? You know, you're sending the plants into space to grow them, and then when you're able to grow them in that environment, you were to bring them back to Earth to reseed the planet?
If they had said that, okay. At least give us a reason.
I think that's what the goal was. They were going to repopulate the planet Earth with the stuff they were growing in space, which makes even less sense because if you move the plant from one environment to the other, isn't there a possibility that most of them will die anyway because they're being moved?
And apparently Earth had a shield of some sort because it was 75 degrees everywhere, he says, at one point.
Oh, geez, it's Highlander 2 all over again.
That's the only way I can think of that happening is some kind of shield that keeps, you know, the temperature controlled.
Oh, no. Oh. Oh, it's another reason to not like this movie. It inspired Highlander 2. Oh,
they didn't say it was a shield.
But you're right. They put the shield up.
The interesting thing about this film, and I will give it credit for not taking long to get to that point in the story where they're recalled and given the order to blow the plants.
Yeah, which, again, makes no fucking sense.
But that's where it gets interesting. Up until then, it's painful.
Yes.
I saw this movie years ago and remembered loving it. And for that half hour, I had no idea why.
Well, think about it. I think there's a lot of things the writer doesn't seem aware of.
Mm.
Like, even in 71, there had to have been a lot of space junk up there already, right?
From like, maybe satellites not. And whatnot.
Maybe not. Yeah, probably nowhere near as much as there is now.
No.
But I guess you could say there's an irony to that.
Mm-hmm.
That they were able to pollute the planet Earth, but did not want to pollute space with the debris.
Mm-hmm. Of course, if you nuke it, you're still going to have debris, only radioactive debris.
Well, yeah, but it is space and there's radioactivity all around anyway, right? Mm-hmm.
Now, this was directed by Douglas Trumbull, who had previously worked as a special effects supervisor on science fiction films, including 2001 A Space Odyssey and The Andromeda Strain.
You know, that is what kept me into this, were just the visuals.
Those models used for the exterior shots of the ship were beautiful. I mean, Lucas has nothing on this.
Right, the space scene, even, like, for that time, mm-hmm. was fucking amazing.
That shot of Saturn, as I mentioned earlier, was originally supposed to be in 2001.
As it should have been. It easily could have been used there. I mean, it was... I was even wondering if this was visually superior to 2001. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Tough call. Same here. That is a tough call.
I mean, some of the exterior model shots were a little too exterior model shot-ish. If I could coin a new phrase there, I don't know. But I mean, the space scenes itself, they're, you know, no boxes or anything around it, you know, like... Lucas had 5 years later. But then again, he wasn't doing like fast moving ships Lucas was.
It wasn't green screen stuff. It was just straight up model shots.
Yeah.
Now, Trumbull also said that he learned to be a director while working on this film. He had no training or experience on the job previously. Kind of shows in a lot of ways.
I really don't know if the director's at fault for this as much as the writers. And the writers... I really don't think I can fault two of the three writers. It has to be the main writer, the one listed first, Derek Washburn, who really did not write a whole lot after this. Like, he only has a handful of credits. But the other two writers, did you see who were the writers of this fucking film?
Didn't notice.
Mike Cimino.
Okay.
Who went on to write The Deer Hunter.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, Heaven's Gate.
Uh-huh.
And then a little known guy by the name of Stephen Botchko.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
That's Stephen Mochko.
See, in terms of the dialogue, I'm okay with this film. So to speak, dialogue. Monologue, I guess. I'm okay. It's the basic premise is the issue.
I just don't understand why they didn't consult, oh, let's see, a botanist or a scientist.
And I'm willing to forgive that because of Dern's performance and the implications of what he does. Because when he kills the first of the crew members,
Yeah.
as I said, it becomes a very different movie. He takes a complete descent into insanity.
Oh, yeah.
And in an earlier scene, there were obvious and very heavy-handed anti-consumerist messages.
Oh, yeah.
And anti-consumerism and, homogenization and, disposable culture and all of that stuff.
Right.
Very heavy-handed in one scene. But it really ultimately becomes about zealotry.
True.
He becomes an absolute insane zealot for his cause, which is preserving the environment, which could explain Dow's involvement. Because it doesn't paint environmentalism in a very friendly fashion if you look at it from that perspective.
I had not thought of it that way.
And I think his descent is really fascinating because that's why the drones become, or seem to become sentient, because that's how he sees them, because he's losing his shit.
It seemed like they made them
Well,
on their own, sentient.
I think it also is because their movement is very human. The way they walk is really organic and interesting. They were portrayed by multiple amputees, actually.
Really?
So
You know what? I
it was
noticed there
people
were
walking on their
actors.
hands.
Holy shit.
I'm assuming they were walking on their hands. It makes sense with the way they move, which made them feel very real and very organic.
Huh. Yeah, I was very confused when I saw actors in the part of them.
Yeah, because they're very small and you don't think an actor can fit
But
multiple
the whole deal
amputees.
with them playing cards and
Well,
stuff,
that's
you
just a
know?
calculation.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I get, and if you can calculate how to play, you can also calculate how to shark. Because one of them throws a hand and then takes the next hand. You assume that it sharked him. Now, I gotta criticize the editing again, like I did last week. Similar issue. During the surgery scene, they cut away very quickly to some other things that didn't make a lot of sense.
Oh, they did a lot of that. A lot of like flashbacks with him thinking about just the stuff that happened at the beginning of the movie,
Okay,
which
it really only bothered me in the surgery scene because it was so fast and jarring.
it really didn't make any sense. Like, why would he be thinking of the time where the dude was driving around in the car? Those weren't like good memories or happy memories. I
He was
mean,
going insane.
it was just this point of we want to like show other faces. It was kind of a concern I think they had of losing the audience in the middle of the, solo performance.
Possibly. Yeah, I can see that. You want to have other actors in there,
Yeah.
and other voices. That's a good point.
But it just felt unnecessary, like it didn't need to, we didn't need to see those guys again, really.
No. They served their purpose. They delivered the clunky exposition and they were out of there.
Right.
Now, one thing this movie did make me realize, I can't stand Joan Baez's voice. She sings two songs in the soundtrack and it was nails on a blackboard to me.
Yeah. I think the music was dated even when this was put out, if you think about it. I mean, 71, 72. It's, a little past that whole granola thing,
Just at the tail end of it, actually.
Yeah. But just enough where, it was no longer like where music was going, It sounded like they used something from 67 rather than 71.
Yeah. And I think they were just playing up the environmental angle.
Oh, but God, man. And yeah, it was just beating you over the head.
And like I said, I just can't take her voice, so that just stuck out like a sore thumb to me.
Well, right. I mean, all of it was her voice, the lyrics, all of it together was just, and it didn't go, This whole idealistic thing of, planting and harvesting the, which is why I'm kind of surprised about, them portraying environmentalists negatively in the end, because when you put the Joan Baez in there, it's hard to imagine that they're doing that.
I think that was just to play that angle without thinking about what they're ultimately trying to say. I think they just threw her in because it fit the movie at that moment,
Yeah.
without a concern for the ultimate message.
But it doesn't fit. Like when you're in the middle of deep space. Well, okay, it's not deep space, but far the fuck away from Earth.
Behind Saturn.
Yes.
Now, about two-thirds of the way in, with about a half hour left of the movie, I realized something that made it even more disturbing than his just descent into madness. He never had an exit strategy.
I assumed his exit strategy was just to live on the ship for the rest of his life.
Again, no exit strategy. What is he
Right.
ultimately trying to do?
Take it to another planet, to one of the moons of Saturn, maybe? I don't know.
He does this. He kills these crew members and steals a ship with no plan of where he's going to go,
Yeah.
which just shows how insane he is.
He just wants to preserve that forest. I mean, you get it, because it is the last
Yeah.
plants in existence. For all we know, there might not be any others. So, I mean, he is keeping the last plants alive, but yeah, where was he going to put them?
Exactly. Where are you going with it?
And even his, what he wound up doing in the end was just so fucking stupid.
It
I
was
mean,
insane. It was the last act of a lunatic.
setting up lights to replace the sun and a drone to watch
Eventually, the drone's going to run out of power. And what's generating the CO2 for the plants?
Exactly. It feels like they didn't know much about botany when they heard this.
Or he was just desperately trying to do something, in the middle of losing his mind and being a complete zealot. He was just desperately trying to keep them alive without really being prepared for what he had to do.
But didn't it give you the feel that he won, that the forest was coming back, and the drone was taking care of them?
See, I didn't get the feeling he won at all. I got the feeling it was just a desperate act that was ultimately futile.
Like if they'd showed the forest still dying in the end, if that was like the last shot of the film, I would agree with you. But they showed the green tree and the drone working away.
And maybe I was thinking too much. I only thought, what happens when the drone runs out of power and the
Well, of course.
CO2 dries out?
Or when those lights that he's using instead of the sun go
Go
burn
out,
out. Like
yeah.
how long would they fucking go for?
Right.
And I still can't get over that. What they we're not by the sun. They're in the dark for too long. They need light. Oh my God. Water runs down.
I didn't take it as that obvious of a statement. I think, again, that
Of course, plants need light.
Dern's performance bought a lot for me in this film.
Jesus Christ, plants need light. If I know
Well,
this,
of course.
I'm not very well steeped in science. Jeez.
I don't think he was making the statement that plants need light. I think it was the realization that they weren't getting enough because of where they were in relation to the sun. That's why he stated it. He hadn't thought about it until he saw them dying and said, "Oh, right, Saturn's blocking the sun."
I don't know.
That's how I took it. I was, again, for fairly forgiving on this, I suppose. Incidentally, several shots of the Valley Forge and its sister ships were later reused in the television series Battlestar Galactica as an agricultural ship in the refugee fleet.
They were used as an agricultural ship in Battlestar too?
Yeah, in the classic.
No kidding. Well, yeah, obviously the classic. But yeah, the hallway they were driving around in was very familiar.
Well, it
Like
was just
this.
kind of generic white triangular sci-fi.
The shape of the hallway is very unique. Like Battlestar, they would always show, like in the classic, they would always have that close up of the ship zipping through the hallway.
Yeah.
And it, yeah.
Well, this was a huge influence on a lot of things. Also, Joel Hodgson, creator of MST3K, credits Silent Running as a major influence for that show.
I know, sitting through it, I felt a lot like him, actually.
Right, I'm done with my notes.
I think the strangulation scene. Wow.
The first crewman he kills
The
with
first kill,
the
yeah.
shovel.
The guy went down just a little
A little
too
too easy,
easily.
admittedly,
Yeah.
yes.
And,
I was just
wow.
happy to see them die at that point because I hated their performance. They were really phoning it in.
They were pretty bad. It was kind of like some buddies, or whatever came along and
And one of them looks familiar. I think he's done work before, but he's done other work, I should say.
Well, yeah, they all have like pictures on IMDb, which means they've done multiple things. And of course, if you didn't like Joan Baez's singing, didn't putting her over a montage help?
Yeah, I think I just blocked that out.
Can we agree that that could be one of the worst montages we've seen?
Yeah.
It was like recapping the first half hour of the film. It's like, all right, we were there too. That just happened. Not much time has passed to make that sentimental. Joan Baez does not fucking help. Oh yeah, I'm done with my notes as well.
On to sequels and remakes. No sequels. I would like to see a remake. I think the concept is interesting. You have to refine it. You explain a few things better.
Explain why the fuck they'd have to put the plants in space. In a way, you could say Moon was a remake of this.
Good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that. I was thinking maybe Clooney in the role of Lowell, but yeah, Rockwell in Moon, effectively the same guy.
Yeah, only he didn't kill anybody.
Good point. All right, on to brains.
On to brains.
As I've been saying, I was very forgiving. I loved Dern's performance in this. It was absolutely brilliant. And seeing him solo for an hour, I think is absolutely worth it. I'm going for.
Wow. I've been back and forth between 2 and 3 a lot on this because, well, yeah, the story is just terrible. I mean, the whole castaway thing towards the end is probably the best part of this. And the I would say breathtaking space scenes. I can imagine seeing this on the full screen. I
In
probably would.
72.
Yeah, I probably would if this were showing on at the down at the music box. I would probably take a run and see this just to see those scenes up on the big screen. But no, I would not recommend seeing this just for that. Dern's performance is cool, but there's just too much what the fuck. So I'm going 3 though.
All right, what have we learned?
We learned. No, seriously, greenhouse. You just put them in the glass building. Away from the rest of the environment.
Yeah, you don't need to leave the planet.
They've been doing it for hundreds of years.
And I learned that robots make really good card sharks. All right, so until 2 weeks from now, we're taking next week off, and we'll be reviewing God Bless America. Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far and every movie we're going to review, up through, I think, to 18, I want to say. The request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. I tried.
I look forward to your hate mail.
But which one of us is getting the hate mail? That's the question, because a lot of people don't like this movie. I think more people agree with you on this one.
All right.
It,
Wow.
generally
That's
speaking.
kind of weird, but oh, all right. I'll take it.
You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861. Remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Well, let's just say that I feel my communications may finally bear some fruit.
Normally, when you see interstellar travel,